coming to you from the HagmanReport.com studio. Located in the Keystone State, birthplace of a mighty nation, it's your host, Doug Hagman.
Well, I suppose it's a banana republic it is, right? The political persecution of Donald Trump. However, there was a witness testifying before the grand jury yesterday, and Tucker Carlson interviewed him last night, the former attorney for Michael Cohen. All of this indictment stuff in Manhattan is about beyond the statute of limitations, upgraded from even a misdemeanor to a felony, but even at that, it's but bottom line is the grand jury witness pretty much made mush out of Michael Cohen, all right, the star witness of the grand jury. So it's kind of a dynamic situation, but regardless,
it's for blowing us, your mind.
It's blowing my mind
so much. There's a wire sticking out of your head.
Is it? Oh, there is, isn't there? Hang on a second. I knew that hurt.
Noodles
everywhere. Where's that coming from? Oh, there it is. Yeah. Well, hang on a second. I thought hair and makeup, they're not doing their job. I thought they were supposed to take care of that. Yeah. Obviously, I'm kidding, right? You guys know that. There's no hair and makeup, as you can see. So I don't want to take up time from my guests, but you know what, folks? Go to HagmanPI.com. That's our new website, HagmanPI.com. Do me a favor. Bookmark that website. I have something to say. I said it. I wrote it at Hagman. Is it still sticking out? I can't see. All right, that's fine. I don't care. Hagman PI. I wrote an article there, and that's where today's show will reside, at HagmanPI.com. And it's pretty straightforward. I'm not mincing any words there. Okay, but again, just to kind of paraphrase Steve Bannon, you guys want to play Smash Mouth? We'll play Smash Mouth. All right. So with me. Because I want to get his take on this. I want to get his take on everything, where we're at, where we are as a country, the bigger picture. And, of course, with me is a good friend of the show, good friend of mine, a man, the man, the myth, the legend, the man that was I first became introduced to via Art Bell. He was with on Art Bell many times. And I got to say that one of the smartest guys I know, and that's Stan Dale from standale.com. That's standale.com. Link in the program description box. So please do me a favor. Bookmark number one, bookmark HagmanPI.com. Number two, please subscribe to our channel on Rumble and or Brighteon and give us a like, because it does affect the metrics for visibility purposes. Do that for me, okay? It doesn't cost you a dime. Might cost you 5 minutes. And then you can tell your friends about this program, this episode, as well as all of our others. But with me, Stan Dale. Stan, how are you, sir?
Oh, I'm well. Thank you. How are you?
Yeah, let me check. Yeah, okay.
Well, from what I just saw, if you don't have a screw loose, you have a wire loose. That's bad.
I tell you what. Never mind what people say about me. So, what are you going to do? I mean, you can dress me up, but you can't dress me up, and you can't take me out, so I don't know. It's good to see you, brother. It's good to see you. It's
good to be here. I'm healthy, recovering, yeah. And the cancer is pretty much defeated.
I love it. I knew it wouldn't get you down.
Nah. This new technique. I was just amazed. Actually, the hospital here in town here in Pueblo, where we live, 10-minute drive from here, a month before I needed the treatment, they got this new machine in that's the front line thing. And I only had to go in 5 days, and each day I spent 5 minutes under this machine, felt nothing, looked at little cherry blossoms in the ceiling they had up there, and walked out and went home. And then they took a test about a week later, and 81% of the cancer was gone already.
Oh,
so
wow.
It continues to go until August. But, wow. I mean, I recommend this Edge treatment to, whoever. It's mighty.
Wow. I'm glad to hear that. And folks, keep praying for Stan, his recovery and his strength, because we need to stand in the fight. We need his knowledge. We need his expertise. And there's something to say about the old guard, old not in age, but in wisdom. And then you've written a tremendous book, Cosmic Conspiracy. Holly, of course, Dare to Prepare, Prophetic Perils and such. So all of your information, go to standale.com, please, folks, and take advantage of his intellectual material, as well as do this, support Stan by way of his website. You can join Patreon. His meetings are absolutely imperative, I believe. I've missed a few because obviously I haven't, my schedule's been wacky, but support Stan and by way of his works as well as on a monthly basis. I consider that a personal favor for doing so. Okay, Stan, what the hell's going on?
This thing with Donald Trump, you know, I've been telling you and your audience for months now, watch out for a spark that's going to set up an armed revolution in this country. And with him going to be arrested, you know, he was saying, gather peacefully and demonstrate outside where I'm being arrested or whatever in various places. Well, he might ask that, but you know that it's going to get out of hand, whether it's by the people that support him or by fifth columnists, you know, agents put in there to stir up the crowd the wrong direction. This will be a spark if we let that happen. If we don't do it, they're going to arrest us all anyway, you know, in the...
Exactly. And here's my frustration, and I'm going to try to sum it up as succinctly as possible. We're damned if we do, we're damned if we don't, all right? People say, well, you have to play nice. You have to be polite. Look, we're beyond that because the left, you know, the communist left, they want to take us down. They want to go scorched earth on us. They're not playing nice. So what the hell, okay? You want to get this party started? I say, okay. You know, if they want to call it January 6th an insurrection, let's show them what an insurrection really is. That's kind of in my mind what I'm thinking. You want to give them a reason to, you know, fight us, okay, or you know, or jail us.
You know, look, whichever way we go, we're going to hurt. You know, the Christian fundamentalists, you know, our evangelical crew, we're going to hurt anybody trying to wake up the population. Even beyond the Christian group, trying to say, look, we're being overthrown by the communists. We're going to hurt. Now, this is the way the communists do in a revolution in any country. They come in first and they put their people on both sides of an issue. They divide the country on issues that are germane to that country. And then when a revolution starts and there's chaos, they move in. And no matter which side comes on top of the revolution, they've got people in place to run the new government, which will be a communist government. Now, if this happens in the States, so in fact, even if it doesn't complete, if they create the chaos on the streets here and, our military is out of weapons and ammunition and stuff and is, you know, just depleted, we are ripe for an invasion by China, Russia, and Iran, believe it or not. And there have been Iranian and Russian and Chinese people slipping across the border down south here for months now. And there's been a surge of them in the last 2 weeks. These people are coming in to do a job here during an attack on the United States, I'm sure. So regardless, we're going to hurt, you know, one or two or three ways. Now, the Chinese are behind most of this. They have used Sun Tzu, the arts of war. And what they're doing is they divide their enemies, you know, the non-Chinese like Russia, Iran, United States, Europe. They make them fight amongst themselves and deplete their weapons and ammunition and their munition, you know, all their armies get tired and have wounded. And then China steps in and takes over the whole thing. That's their plan. Let your enemies defeat themselves. And while they're weak and recovering from, you know, the fighting between themselves, move in, take over, and your losses will be minimal and you'll control the whole game. And their whole game is control of a new world order. Now, they're not going to make it. I know that because the Antichrist is going to take over and have Europe and the Middle East under his belt, but not China. They'll be at each other's face, you know, in the Armageddon crisis after the 7-year tribulation. Anyway, I digress, but I'm saying Wow. We're at a point where revolution is almost imperative, and no matter which way you go, it's going to hurt us.
Well, my view is the tree of liberty is thirsty right now. And that's all, you know, take that for how you will. But I'm done playing games. I'm with Scott Adams, who said, look, if you're, you know, all white people are racist, they're bad people, you're not my friend. I am not friends. I mean, I don't want anyone who feels that way to be my friend. I don't want to see them. I don't want them near me. I don't want any. And if that's an artifact or a consequence of this division, this divisiveness that's being foisted upon us, I don't care. Because if they're that brainwashed to be their own worst enemy, so be it. Because just get out of my orbit, or I'll give you some motivation to get out of the way. You know, I'm just saying that.
Yeah.
You know.
Oh, they're going to come after us for saying stuff like this. You know that.
No,
but this
course.
Is what we feel, what we talk about. You know, when we're off here.
You know, are we not allowed to have opinions? I mean, I'm not advocating anything. I'm just saying this is how I feel.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
I don't know. Go ahead, sir.
I know. And look, we're discussing history. I mean, this is the history of how the communists take over a country. And, you know, we're repeating what has happened in Russia itself and in South America and various places in Cuba. It's just history. And, of course, a lot of our Generation Z or whatever it is, or the current generation is, are not fully educated because of COVID and other things and wokeness. And so they're not aware of the fact that we're repeating history. If you don't study it and learn it, you're going to repeat it.
And I have to, again, plug Cosmic Conspiracy, because you laid a lot of this out, the structure of what we're into right now, back in 1976, and, of course, the final edition updated. Cosmic Conspiracy, folks, if you haven't done so already, you got to get a copy of it. Go to standeo.com. There it is right there. It's never too far from my reach, except for right now, and I apologize for that. But thank you for writing that, and thank you for still having, you know, allowing people to buy that, because I think you were one of the first to come out with the grand plan of things, and I appreciate you for that. So there.
Well, you can thank
send
you
me
for
the,
that.
You can send me the check. I'm kidding. I'm kidding. But folks, educate yourselves as to what's going on. And go ahead.
And also use that book as a witness tool to people who are your friends and family that are on the edge of maybe panicking because of the world situation, the financial threats to them. Give them that book to read the whole game plan, but make sure they read page 127. It's the signature on that counts, because if they can read that page and say that they have joined with Jesus, they're saved.
Yep.
And I put that in there because that whole book was given to me, I guess, by the good Lord when I first converted to Christianity. And so get that and give it to them as a witness tool. It's in over 22 countries now, then, all over the world. And I guess we're running close to 300,000 copies floating around out there. And understand this, in Clinton's administration, President Clinton, when the Defense Department and his cabinet, when they had a copy of that book, they let me know about it in 1996 or 97. Jim Schlesinger, who was the Secretary of Defense for him, let it be known through a civilian that they had copies of my book there and that I had the game plan down correct. Okay, and so they never came out public and said it. They just sent through a civilian there in Australia. Jim Schlesinger talked to her direct and said, look, call him up and tell him what I'm telling you. So understand that book is darn near spot on to the plan that the globalists have.
They're not trying to hide this anymore, are they?
No. And, you know, I'm not afraid of him. I mean, they thought, well, let's let him keep on going and talk about it all. And, you know, we'll ferret out all the people that support him. And if it gets out of hand, we'll discredit him or do something, you know. And so people have asked that. How come you're still walking around? I said, well, I guess I'm, you know, I fit their puzzle somehow.
Yeah. Well, you know, right now it seems like the communist left satanic cabal, whatever you want to call them, are saying, this is what we're going to do, and there's nothing you can do about it. Ha ha. It's in our faces. And that's, and of course, the stooges will, thinking that they're going to have a seat at the table, won't have a seat at the table. They're going to be used and abused and shot up like the rest of us. You know,
that's
shot.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, well, they did that in the Russian Revolution for sure. They came in and all the people that had betrayed their original government and the Tsar and everything to bring in the communist revolution, those people were either sent to Siberia or killed.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and that's going to happen to our Illuminists on the planet. They're going to be disposed of when they're through with them. Now, you know, we've said this many times before. We're faced with more problems than just the communist revolution. We're faced with problems with the sun and our weather.
Oh, yeah.
And nuclear war, of course. But these things like the sun, you know, celestial events that affect us here on Earth, it could put us back into, you know, horse and buggy days if we get a coronal mass ejection that takes out all the power on the planet. Mm-hmm. So if that's something that we can't fix, which it is, we can try to protect our grid and electronics with, you know, EMP shields like you've got on your site there. But the majority of the planet is going to be without power because they didn't protect their stuff. So if you were the world government, and let's say it's going to be a Chinese on one side and the New World Order in Europe, you know, the Antichrist kingdom, these two wouldn't come out and tell us, the people, look, there's something facing us so terrible from the sun that we can't fix it. And it's going to hit crops. It's going to make severe weather. It'll virtually destroy, you know, 7/10 of the planet's population. They wouldn't come out and say that if they suspected it, which they do. They would let people like you and I and others that investigate these things talk about it, and there would be a small segment of the population of Earth that would listen to us and say, aha, they're right, so we better prepare ourselves. But other than that, they would not make it public officially because it would create anarchy. People would start stealing from each other and rioting, and tribes would form, and all civilization would break down. So if you were in charge, you know, trying to save Earth, you would do something like that. And I'm not against having a global new world order as long as it's run by a fair, you know, like Jesus.
And that
I would support. And even when he takes over in the 1,000-year reign after the rapture, after the tribulation period, he's still going to have countries that will not follow his law, and he'll have to withhold the reign and starve them out. It says that in the Bible. So this is going to continue into the millennium. There's going to be, you know, conflict, but he's going to be in charge. That's a big difference.
Oh. Wow. Okay. Well, take us where you want to take us, because I think you mentioned the sun. Get your SPF 750 out as opposed to.
Yeah. You know, yeah. The sun in the last, five days, I think, inclusive count today. It's still running, of course. I haven't finished all of today. But the sun has been so active with coronal mass ejection flares and like a plasma tornado up near the northern pole of the sun, or what's supposed to be the northern pole of it, that I made a video of it just earlier today. I'm going to click on slide 40. Eric, if you're following, you can do that on slide 40 in our show images page on standale.com. If you just click on slide 40, it should bring up. Yeah, there you go. Now, look at those eruptions on the sun.
It's an angry sun.
Oh, hey, you know, it's very angry. And the other thing is, we'll look at this a couple seconds more, and then I want to shift back to the show images page. The other thing is, and we're going to go to slide 41 after this. All right, let's go to slide 41. There is a hole, an apparent hole. It's really just a change in the temperature of the emitted light coming from. There's that black spot down at the bottom part of the sun. That is a hole in the chromosphere, the outer part of the sun there. And it's emitting very strong solar wind at us, you know, kind of in the southern direction, which is going to affect our weather for the next 2 or 3 days. And then to the upper, to the left of that dark spot there, you see the active regions where, you know, things are spewing out and these magnetic lines are stretching out. This is showing, you know, what's coming out of the sun as far as large coronal mass ejections and things that can affect our power grid. And if you can just kind of look, tilt your head slightly to the right as you're looking at this, you'll see a kind of a dark line up toward what would be the North Pole, kind of slanting down. And that's where the North Pole is at the moment, and the South Pole is kind of at that place. And so what I'm going to say is, let's now shift over to, slide 45.
All right.
Wow. Now, slide 45 is it shows the magnetic field lines. You know, you can rotate it in 3D and stuff like that, but I wasn't sure, whether to link it to that site or just talk about it. And you can enlarge the picture on the left, just click on it and enlarge it, and you'll see that's what we're facing in the sun right now. And the green lines are the current pole at the north, and the purple lines are at the south. These poles, every 11.5 to 11.75 years, reverse. That's a process that takes about 2 years. And one pole, either the north or the south, will shift and become the same as the other pole for up to 2 years until the other pole flips around. So at about a year and a half to 2 year period during every solar cycle, you have two north poles or two south poles on the sun. They're not balanced. And so it's the transition that creates havoc on the surface of the sun. Now, looking at the image on the right, to click your screen and screen back down, and then click on the right, and you'll see this is what's coming at us in 6 days, 4 to 6 days. We'll be seeing these very active eruptive places faced right at us. And you can see that the green and the purple lines are not lining up. They're tilted to the right at the top, and at the left kind of, well, to the right if you're on the back side of the sun. But these things are stretching one side of the sun while they're cramping the other side. If your fuel is low, like if you burned a lot of your hydrogen fuel in the sun, which we have, it's a very thin layer that's subject to stretching, and like a plastic sheet, it'll start to tear in places if you stretch it too hard. And that's what's happening here. This is why this activity, which we've seen before, we've seen coronal mass ejections and flares and stuff over the period we've been collecting data. But when the surface of the sun is so thin, then it becomes more problematic in releasing solar wind and coronal mass ejections, which if we get one like, let's see, what was that? That was, we had about on the 13th of this month a coronal mass ejection that sent out a halo, like a perfect circle of emitted plasma, but it's directly opposite of us on the backside of the sun. And even then, though it was on the backside of the sun, we got some peripheral damage or influence on our weather and communications, even though it was pointed away from us. Now, if it was pointed at us, that might be like the Carrington event in 1859, where we wipe out all electronics. So I can't stress enough, keep an eye on the sun. Click on slide 42, Eric, and bring it up there. And that shows us the bright white spots on slide 42, which is a heliographic. It shows the backside of the sun there. And in the middle of where that dark spot is what we're looking at on the other picture. That's the solar wind coming out of that. And then you see these bright white areas, which are sources of CMEs and flares. And those are the things you got to watch more than the solar wind at the moment. Those are approaching us, and you can see that it's about 4 days, maybe. Well, they'll start hitting us in 3 days, but it's about 4 to 7 days before all this is directly pointed at the Earth. And then it'll come around again in another 28 to 30 days. I don't know whether you know this or not, but the polar regions spin faster. The equatorial regions spin faster than the polar regions. And so one part of the sun will orbit in 28 days, another one in 30 days. So toward the polar regions versus the equatorial regions. So I give you an estimate based on the equator of those things.
In theory, would you be able to say, okay, 4 days, if you saw something, well, here's my question. Would you be able to give a 4-day warning, I guess?
No.
Because
I wouldn't. I don't know whether, you know, the government sources would be able to tell. They're analyzing a lot of data that's still in the beta stage, as far as I know. But there are signs that they look for now, very small signs all over the sun. And they put these together with an artificial intelligence to try to estimate, you know, do we have a 4-day warning that it's coming? And at the moment, using what I use, just, you know, the human brain and the history of the stuff I've watched, I feel that as the side of the sun that's compressed like this, as it comes around, that we're exposed to this threat, and we will be so for another probably 4-5 years as the sun goes through its cycle. And that'll take us into the tribulation period, which has been forecast to have a solar flare so big that the sun throws off an outer shell and the light of the sun becomes 7 times brighter for a brief second and cooks a third of the planet. We're seeing what might be the groundwork for that happening somewhere during the tribulation period of 7 years. So that helps me to say to you, look, watch out, here it comes. But I could be surprised just like everybody else. I'm basing my guesstimate on what has happened before. And that's called past logic, where we use everything that you've had before as a goal and then extrapolate, say, if it's happened this way before, it'll happen this way again. And therefore, we can expect it when the hot spots are facing us. There might be something on the dead side of the sun where there's nothing happening that comes straight at us as a surprise. Because if you look at the sun and imagine the magnetic field changes as the poles move, it's pulling one side of the sun and compressing the other. So we're looking down here where my thumbs are at coronal mass ejections and flares that we can see. And at the same time, it's stretching thin the surface over here. So what happens? Does that side suddenly surprise us with a massive coronal mass ejection, you know, from the turbulence inside the sun? So, no, I can't give you a 4-day warning. I can kind of give you a general season that we're in, and that can last 4 or 5 years before we pass through that and everything calms down.
Got it.
Do you remember that video I showed you? Oh, gosh. 2, 3, 4 months ago, where I took a time-lapse photography from the European Space Agency, where they watched a star do that very thing to throw off its outer shell, but not go nova. And that was, in the Monoceros cluster. One of those stars did that.
Oh,
and we watched,
yes.
It was interesting. And it showed a state that the star can go through, like our sun, that's not actually nova. It's just an equation change in the nuclear chemistry of that star. And so it's not going to like go supernova and wipe us out yet, but it can throw debris out so dense, like a cloud, like I think it's in Joel, where they say, you know, a cloud surrounds the sun, and it blocked out a third of the light of the stars and the moon, etc. And then they say that, you know, a third of the planet's cooked by light being 7 times brighter, which would happen when you take that outer shell of the sun and, you know, as dust blew it away, and there would be a change, and then it would be over. That flash would be very quick, and it would burn the surface of the Earth very quickly at that exposed part. So all these things fit with biblical prophecy. So being a student of the Bible and believing everything in it is history and correct prophecy scientifically, I'm tying the two together and saying, I think we're there. We're very close to these things happening.
Wow. And as you mentioned before, though, the your analysis, what is it? Post hoc, ergo propter hoc.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
Where'd that come from?
I couldn't get...
I mean, okay.
I'm glad you remember, because my tongue wasn't working this morning.
Wow, I impressed myself there for a second. Okay.
Yeah. I'm impressed.
Okay. Sometimes I scare myself. Okay, wow. So biblical prophecy. I mean, it looks like everything's lining up, right?
Yeah. Definitely. We're in the end times. We're in the season. We don't know the hour or the day of these things exactly, but we're in the season.
Yeah.
Talking about the stars and everything, if you look at slide 47, this is something that's quite a problem that's sneaked up on us. it's showing the number of pieces of debris that we've left in orbit around the planet from rockets, you know, throwing off junk, you know, and exploding or whatever after they put their satellite up. And there are 100 trillion pieces of junk that's about a quarter of an inch or bigger orbiting the Earth at around 17 to 18,000 miles an hour in some orbits and faster and slower in others. Now, you don't want to be in a space station in the path of these things. For a quarter of an inch piece of debris, if it's moving in the opposite direction to you, it will hit your space station at 34,000 miles an hour, which will do a lot of hurt. It could bring the station down. And so most of the things are traveling in the same orbit around, let's say clockwise around the Earth. But those that are not, which have been put in stationary orbits or, you know, are not moving as fast as everything else, you'll have a relative speed in thousands of miles an hour. And these bullets, you know, will put holes in whatever it hits up there. So how do you get rid of all these? The Chinese are looking at the problem at the moment, and they're looking at killer satellites to get up there and kill all the debris that they can find. But one of the solutions, which is not really a good solution or a happy one, is let's go up there in orbit where we know a lot of this junk is and it's out of the way of the satellites that we're using, and let's explode a, you know, a pack of sand, little tiny bullets of sand that will go through in opposite direction and sweep all this debris into orbits that will make them descend to the Earth. You know, they'll burn up coming down as meteorite shower. As I say, this takes a global effort, a global government, because every government that got stuff up there has got to admit to doing this, agree to doing it. Now, since China is not going to join the New World Order under Satan's man, be in opposition to it, we're going to have problems with the Asian sector over there not wanting us to clean the debris out, just let it fall down. And, you know, try to track 100 trillion pieces of debris on your computers and stuff from the ground. If you don't have that ability, this stuff can fall anywhere. And cleaning it with this dust cloud or sand cloud and stuff like that could cause other changes in vectors of these pieces that are bigger than a quarter of an inch, where they get into a collide path with existing satellites or for communications or defense or whatever. So, and weather monitoring. This is a real problem. Taking out the trash is going to be a real problem with this. So just wanted to share that happy news with you. We've got to figure out some clever way to do this. The Chinese are looking at laser spots to take out the bigger chunks, you know, and make them descend into a predictable path when they hit the ground. And I suppose we're looking at that too. But, you know, it still leaves a lot of junk up there.
Yeah.
And it looks pretty pretty crowded when you look at this picture. But understand that when you get down into it, that it's a lot, the particles are spread apart a lot further than what you would think looking at this here.
Well, it's just kind of mind-blowing that there's that much stuff up there. To me. And when it starts coming down, I guess, yeah, everyone don their bicycle helmets because, you know, you never know.
Well, that's where I put my freezer.
What?
My freezer that went bad. I sent it to space.
You just shot it
right. Well, yeah, and they've been saying that to get rid of the radioactive byproducts of nuclear reactors, that they suggest putting it in rockets and shooting it into the sun, which is a great idea as long as that rocket doesn't explode on the way out or crash, you know, on the way out and spread that junk everywhere. We went through this scenario in West Australia when Skylab was re-entering. It collapsed its orbit and it crashed into West Australia when I was there. In fact, I still have a piece of one of the oxygen tank fibers here in my collection. But we didn't know whether the United States had a nuclear reactor on board that or not. And so there was a lot of concern about, are you going to spread radioactive debris all over West Australia? Anyway, imagine all the stuff we've got up there in orbit now that must have, you know, nuclear reactors of some sort. And when those come down, it's not just simply a meteor shower. It's a nuclear reactor's byproduct meteor shower. You know, it's like a dirty bomb coming in from space.
So the bicycle helmet won't be enough. You got to wrap yourself up in a radiological suit of some kind. Okay, I get it. My goodness. That is,
it's happy news. Happy news. Yeah.
Okay. Wow.
Let's see. Oh, and talking about, when we were talking about earlier in the show about the threat of revolution, you know, and chaos, in slide 46, there's a, it links to a video, and it's called We the People Are the Storm, and Tactical Civics, along with constitutionality-focused militias, are unstoppable and will take back the Republic of America. And so I say, is this the beginning of another revolution in America? When you look at this, these are all, you know, sober people talking about that you can have constitutional militias that's allowed under the Constitution, and these could be used to forcibly take order back and stop the invasion of the country by communists. And let's face it, this is not a political issue. This is a war. The communists from China and Russia are taking over the United States. They've just about finished it. And so what they're advocating, here's what you and I were talking about at the beginning of the show. We have the right to form militias by the Constitution in each state and, you know, stop the encroachment or the invasion of communist forces or any other force that's an enemy of the country. So they can complain about us, but this is the truth.
We not just a right, but a duty. And my problem is, you know, we can talk all day long about the problems, but what are we gonna do about it? In my view, we should get together, and this is just my opinion, and let's form groups, go down to the southern border, and armed, and anyone wants to cross, let's make them think twice. They're gonna have to, you know, do the Mexican dance there, you know, as they dodge the lead coming out. I'm to the point now where, you know, we're at a war, okay? We're in a war, and we better start acting like it. That, and I'm being as transparent as I can be. I wish no one harm. I really don't. But I'm not going to sit here and allow my house, my studio, my office to be invaded, or my country. So anyway, that's just my personal opinion. And there's more of us than there are of them. And right now they're afraid. I believe they're afraid of us. We've got them afraid of us because.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Look, it's not like the barbarians are at the gate. The barbarians have already knocked down the wall of the gate, and they're flooding into the country.
Yes.
You know, the alarms have to go off. Yes. I mean, people that live down in the south on the border, on our side of the border, know that we're in real trouble, have been for some time, because these people are running across their property. They're breaking their homes to get stuff. And one farmer, of course, you know, who didn't get convicted of it, but somebody shot and killed one of the illegals that was trying to break into his home, or yes, would have been, they were on his property. Well, you have the right to defend your property, for goodness sakes.
Well, there's an Arizona rancher that, I don't know if this is who you're talking about, that's been charged with murder. Okay. I don't know the current status of that, but...
I think he was acquitted of that, but anyway.
Well, you know, there's going to be more and more of those kind of people. And when you match that up with the Soros DAs, you know, if you live in a county where the district attorney is like a Soros place DA, which is most blue counties, obviously, you could get arrested for protecting your own home, which is not right. It's not fair. But again, what are we going to do about it? We just can't type nasty letters. We have to form, I believe, a formidable force to counteract these individuals. But we have to do so, hopefully, within the confines of the Constitution, you know, legally, lawfully, and with the imprimatur of the sheriff, if you've got a sheriff. But we can't just allow this to happen and then expect for someone else to rescue us because no one else is coming to our aid. Go ahead.
You know, it's odd when you think about it because, you know, police have told me before when I talked to them offline, if someone breaks into your home and is threatening your family, go ahead and take them out, but be sure that they fall down inside your home because you can prove that they invaded your home. Otherwise, if they're outside, you're going to get prosecuted. And we're looking at situations where millions are flooding into the country, and they're not going away. I mean, I don't know whether we've got 20 or 30 million illegals that have come into the country over the period of time we've been talking about this, or maybe 12, 15 years ago to now. And as I said, the barbarians are no longer at the gate. They're flooding in. So we've got to be able to defend ourselves. And even the Bible says a man, you know, is What is it? He's irresponsible if he doesn't take the sword and protect his family.
Basically, what good is he that does not defend his family?
That's right. That's right.
Paraphrasing.
Now look at slide 54. Going along with this this thought of barbarians at the gate. This is talking. It's an article in the Town Hall. One of it is what happens if Trump isn't arrested and the political persecution of President Trump. But there's one article there that I got this that I wanted to talk about. It's called "Are We the Byzantines?" Constantinople, you know, had been around for a thousand years, like from 400 or 500 AD up to about 1453 AD, and it tells about the things that led to the fall of Constantinople. It says, always outnumbered in a sea of enemies like us, the Byzantine survival had depended on its realist diplomacy of dividing its enemies, like the Chinese practice, avoiding military quagmires, and ensuring constant deterrence, which we're falling down on now. And you can scroll down through the article, and you see it covers the things that we're doing that are so much like what happened to Constantinople. I'm just going down here to see if we've got numbers down here somewhere, I think. Anyway, the basis of it is that Constantinople had, you know, 150,000 people or something living in at the time, as I recall. But, you know, it was at the height of technology, and it was wealthy and wunderbar and all that kind of stuff. But it fell because they fell down on being defensive and having defensive weapons and keeping the invaders out of their borders. They just let them roll in, and nobody did anything about it, and they were overthrown.
It says here there were only 7,000 defenders on the walls to hold back a huge Turkish army of over 150,000.
Yeah, they had 800,000 citizens there, and after the invasion, only 50,000 of them were left alive. It's right above what you were just reading, that paragraph above it.
Yep, I see that.
So, you know, this is a good place to go and read about things, political things, that, you know, from our point of view, I think, this townhall.com. Anyway, just I want to alert people.
And people don't know history. We need to understand history, what happened before us, because, you know, there's really kind of nothing new under the sun that's happened before. And look at the results. So thank you for pointing this out. And, you want to see your family. Just real quick, you see all of these videos on various social media feeds of illegals attacking people. Okay, whether it be at the subway or on the subway or near the subway or on the streets, and I mean it's just not just illegals, but the majority, and we're not doing a damn thing about it,
Do they call those people that wear the red uniforms, the caps in New York subway? The
Guardian Angels.
Guardian Angels. Right. Well, right. Yeah, we need more of those.
Yeah,
we do.
Yeah,
we everywhere.
Well, and I think we have to stop the problem right at the source. That's at the southern border. I was talking to someone over the weekend, this past weekend, and I'd like to go down just to see for myself. But what I mean, the cartels control both sides of the border, and that was handed to them by Biden and the people behind Biden, including the Obamas and crew. So. Yeah, I mean, we've got to shore up our defenses. It's kind of late in the game, but we need to do something.
Yeah, we do. And I think a lot of us agree that study prophecy that America is the modern Babylon, you know, as far as a site. And I think that Babylon is destroyed, you know, utterly destroyed in the Book of Revelation. It's thrown down like a great millstone into the water. Well, I don't know whether that's from debris from the sun or whether it's from invasion or whatever. The Hopi Indians told Holly and I that we're going to be invaded by China, Russia, and one Middle Eastern nation. They didn't say Iran. They just said a Middle Eastern nation. I've said this many times. And we're seeing that scenario play out right now. And it says at the time that the United States is having multifaceted civil wars amongst itself that this invasion takes place, you know, whether it be rich against poor, black against white, Hindu against Muslim, and Muslim against Christian, whatever, multifaceted civil wars. So you didn't know who to trust. You know, there's so many sides to it. And while that's happening, we're confused and we can't act as a country to defend. In fact, we haven't got the resources left now, thanks to Biden, to defend ourselves properly. And he's sending it all over to flipping Ukraine. This
they care more about Ukraine's borders than our borders. And yeah, it makes absolutely no sense. There are no good guys, by the way, in the Ukrainian war. Ukraine is one of the most corrupt countries on the planet. Even now, they are. Yeah. And, of course, they've got you want to talk about Nazis, man. They got one hell of a Nazi presence there. But then again, okay.
Well, you know, look, with the oppression of Christian churches and Christianity there, you know, I mean, why are we sending them anything? You know, let them handle their own problem.
Well, and, you know, again, that goes back, some of the answers can be, at least in my view, can be found in the Hunter Biden laptop, which held the answers for, 4 years now. The money arrangements between the Biden family, the Biden crime family, and Ukrainians, as well as the Chinese and even the Russians, it's all there for anyone to see. If you go to, I think, Marco Polo USA, there's a site there that has the entire hard drive on because people, because I've got a copy of that. In fact, this is a identical copy of the hard drive of Hunter Biden. I say that only because, there's proof that Biden is a foreign agent. And you know what? Those people who voted for him, I hope you're happy with yourselves, and I hope you see what you've done. And you're not my friend. You'll never be my friend. So anyway, there you go. Go ahead.
Yeah. All right. Now, I think the catalyst for a lot of global confrontation at the present time is going to be Israel and the surrounding Middle Eastern nations. That's, you know, not hard to believe if you read prophecy and understand it. Now, when I see China getting Saudi Arabia and Iran together after they've been at each other's throats for many years, because the Iranian version of Islam is Shiite or like violent overthrow of people to get them to be Shiite Muslims, whereas the Saudis and the rest of the Middle East are like Sunni or peaceful, Mohammedans, trying to gradually by occupying and having children turn countries into Islamic way of life. So they were against each other, and especially Iran was irritated at Saudi Arabia under the Prince Mohammed bin Salman's rule because his dad is kind of, you know, taking a back seat. And he killed a cleric that was a Shiite cleric operating in Saudi Arabia. So Iran was really irritated, and so they've been at odds with each other, and this was playing out down in Yemen in a proxy war between Saudi Arabia and the Yemenis, which was really between Saudi Arabia and Iran. But anyhow, the Chinese have stepped into that theater and said to Saudi Arabia and to Iran, look, let's have a peace talk and we'll offer some things and you guys can be at peace. And suddenly you see there in slides 49, 50, and 51 that Saudi Arabia and Iran are shaking hands and there's a peace deal between them. Now, this, you know, Saudi Arabia at the same time is offering a peace deal to Iran, Israel, to make peace between them and Saudi Arabia. There are a few things that have to be done before that is finished. But how can they make peace with Israel when Israel and Iran are mortal enemies and Israel is having to do all it can to stop the production or planting of nuclear weapons close to, you know, the Golan Heights, you know, up in Syria, to protect themselves? And if Saudi Arabia is friends with Iran, and Saudi Arabia wants to now be friends with Israel, there's a problem. And we're going to see one of the two wars in the Middle East occur because of that. But what's going to hurt the Saudis and the Iranians, anyone else for that matter that comes after Israel, is they aren't aware of the kind of weapons, the nuclear, that Israel has. And prophecy kind of does give a clue about that. But anyway, there's going to be fire destroy these invading armies at their front where they're coming into Israel. But Again, that's prophecy. And that's Israel trying to take care of itself, because we, the United States, are so weak and so not supportive of Israel any longer with this Biden administration that, Russia and China, anybody else that wants to come after Israel can do so without fear of the United States attacking them, or defending Israel by attacking these enemies of Israel. So I watched the Middle East moves like this, and the Saudis will accept the Abraham Accords under a certain condition they've made with the United States. In that condition is they will let Saudi Arabia have its own nuclear power systems to power the country. Well, of course, that gives them access to making their own nuclear weapons. So if the United States doesn't give them permission to do that, then the Saudis won't sign the Abraham Accords and be at peace with Israel and many other Middle Eastern nations. So it's a mess over there, and the Antichrist coming to power is going to astound everybody, because it's going to say, here's what we do, children. Here's how we bring everybody together and live in peace. And people are going to be so frightened of the alternative that they will follow him. They think he's a genius, but he's not. But anyway, I'm pontificating on that. But while we're talking about Israel, I tell you what. The Israelis and their development of technologies in food production, in medical, in heart surgery, and even in artificial intelligence, for that matter, is astounding. It's such a brilliant nation focused on doing things that will help not only Israel, but the world into feeding themselves and getting fresh water to places that don't have it. And slide 48, I show a link to a tomato factory where they have programmed a robot that goes along on wheels, a little carriage, in like a hothouse or greenhouse where they're growing tomatoes. And it looks at the tomatoes. It has artificial intelligence. It says, okay, here's a group of tomatoes. Here's where I cut. Oh, wait a minute. Let me see if that tomato is ripe enough yet. And so it can determine ripeness like a human could. And then it'll pick it off with cutter scissors down into the bucket. And it's not only working on this, but it'll be used for other types of crops that it can be programmed for. It's in the early stages, but you think, wow, that's really incredible. What are the people that used to do that job going to do then for work? Are they going to sit and do nothing? You see, there's pluses and minuses of this robotic stuff. And often I've wondered, in the heavens, the people that make it to be with the Lord and his kingdom, I suppose food and water and everything else will be supplied by him. But what do you do if all that's taken care of? What's your incentive to do anything? This is what I wondered about. What will we do? Will we be inventing still? Will we be traveling to other galaxies? Or, I don't know. But this is a small microcosm of what I'm worrying about on the big scale. What do you do with the people that aren't producing the food and the water and stuff like that anymore? Do they just become maintenance men for these robots and the rest of us just kind of play games or something? I don't know. I just, how do you incentivize people to do anything if everything is taken care of for them?
And there, I believe therein lies a very deep question. when you start thinking about this, we are creating our own obsolete man, to reference the Twilight Zone episode. But yes. Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I got about 5 minutes or so?
We have about 6 minutes. Yes.
Okay, good. Okay. Another thing that I wanted to touch on while we're having all these deep thoughts here is I've been looking in the Middle East at the legend of Shalmaneser, the first, second, and third. These were kings in Assyria, before the time of Solomon in Israel. Now, Solomon's mother Bathsheba was originally married to a Hittite, and she knew about the legends of the Assyrians, which the Hittites picked up. They were neighbors, and the legends talked about this great king, Shalmaneser. It's like Solomon, but Shalmaneser, and how he had a device that would go before his armies and produce fire and wipe out the enemies. So a lot of this sounded like the story of Moses to me, and the Ark of the Covenant going before him, and the armies that Joshua was leading, And so I started looking at the Assyrian and Hittite legends and found that there's a temple in Assyria that was there around 1265 BC, it's slide 38, and there's the remains of it, and it was to their gods, or god, whatever, I think it was their gods. And I looked at that and the formation of it, and then I realized, well, this is very similar to the layout that Solomon, whose name in Hebrew is Shlomo, but everybody seemed to call him Solomon, like they were mixing his history with Shalman. And you look at the in slide 37, I compare that one you just saw, the pictures of the Ain Dara temple, with the floor plan of what Solomon developed for, you know, the Temple of Solomon. And they have three levels, three areas, just like Solomon did. And it's all almost like his mother said to him, look, you know, there was a thing that they built for Shalmaneser's time, you know, for worshiping the gods over there. We can make it so we have this women's court and this and that and whatever. So I think there's confusion in the history of the Middle East about who Solomon was, whether they're mixing part of Shalman's deeds with Shlomo's deeds in Israel. And so you can see my quandary here. I've been trying to rationalize these things, but trying to be honest about it and see, you know,
wow,
where all this came from. I mean, the legend of Shalmaneser, I mean, he had, you know, thousands of horses and chariots and armies, and was really a big note several hundred years before King Solomon of Israel was born. And as I say, in Hebrew, Solomon's name originally should have been Jedidiah, but, you know, his mother changed it to Shlomo. But that name has gradually merged into Solomon because of the influence of the Shalmaneser histories. This is what I do in my spare time.
I'm looking at this. You raise a good, I mean, wow. That's all I have to say is, wow. This is a good point. You were still working on this then, right?
Oh, yeah. It's a mind that's looking for answers and solving puzzles. And I look at the Arab legends of King Solomon, Shalman, perhaps, how he dealt with the jinns, and how we're having trouble finding some of the things that they attribute to Solomon's reign, but in Israel. But we can look at other places in Saudi Arabia, we can find evidence that there was this great king. And so I just, you know, I'm trying to be honest about this to see if some of this has been perverted in what was reported to us.
Interesting. Folks, go to standale.com. And if you're listening to this by way of podcast or just audio, take a look at these images. All of the images are fascinating, but this in particular, good points, especially when you look at the side-by-side images of the temple. And wow, okay, yeah.
Yeah.
It could change things. Well, not change things, but we could be looking at something in a different, totally different light.
Have I got another minute or two?
Yes.
Okay. In slide 43, it's using stem cell technology. Scientists grew antlers on a mouse. Okay. They used the stem cells from an antler and put it into the mouse, and they grew horns on this mouse. Now, The thing is, I read about the possibility of this probably 25 years ago in a book called The Body Electric. And in there, they did experiments with frogs where they cut off an arm of another frog and transplanted it to the chest of another frog, and it took root and grew, you know, and became a three-armed frog. Now, they were showing that there are ways to alter the program that generates our body, so that you can alter it by putting other stem cells in there and grow, well, in our case, new arms or new legs for people that have lost them. It might take a few years for it to complete, but using this technique, they could regrow your body and repair broken organs and things like that. Isn't that incredible?
It is, and I'm somewhat familiar with that in terms of healing of soft tissue. So very interesting indeed. But just because you can doesn't mean you should, especially with some of the things you mentioned. But wow.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I know. But anyway, it's You know, I've often wondered about that, how it works in our body to grow arms instead of ears here, you know, that kind of stuff.
Oh, chimera. Okay. Yeah. Stan Dale, you're the man. StanDale.com. Thank you so very, very much. Talk to you soon.
You bet. All bye-bye right. Now.
See you. That'll do it, folks. Have a good day.